We're holding on Nun Amr Aleph, third line. Since we talked about in the Mishnah about the case where a person leaves Yerushalayim and has Bsar Kodesh, meat of Kodshim, with him, and the various cases when we make him return to Yerushalayim to burn it and when not, the bottom line we said was as far as the amount that he has, that there's a machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, what's the minimum amount he has to have in order for it to be an issue that he has to return to Yerushalayim. But even then, we said even if he has that amount, if he's already passed Sofim, then he doesn't have to go back. According to Rashi, Sofim is a specific village of that name. According to Tosfos, it means any place from which in any direction, which is the last point from which you can see Yerushalayim before you continue on in that way. Anyway, so if you're within that part and you have more than a kezias or a kebetza, according to the different opinions, then you have to go back to Yerushalayim and burn it there. And if not, then you can burn it wherever you want. So since we're talking about Yerushalayim, about going out of Yerushalayim, so the Gemara is now going to give us a piece of Agadta, which eventually, during the course of it, we're going to talk about the fact that in the Yomos HaMashiach, Yerushalayim is going to be much larger. So the pasuk we're going to be mentioning for that purpose is a pasuk in Zechariah, in the last parak of Zechariah, which we read as the Haftarah on the first day Sukkos. And the Gemara starts off by explaining an earlier pasuk in it, and then eventually we're going to get back to that matter of Yerushalayim being enlarged. So the pasuk says, "V'hoya." But now the simple meaning of the psukim there in Zechariah is describing the milchemes Gog and Magog. Some of the mafoshim say that there's going to be multiple milchemes Gog and Magogs, or multiple stages in it, or whatever. This one is talking about the final stage when the goyim attack Yerushalayim. As the pasuk says, they conquer it. Half the people are sent out into Golos, etc. And then Hashem shows up, kavyachol, and defeats the goyim completely. And which we're going to explain further down on the Amud, and all the goyim recognize Hashem's rulership, and they come every year to the Beis Hamikdash on Sukkos. So the pasuk says in that connection, talking about the war of Milchamas Gog and Magog, and afterwards Yemos HaMashiach, Vahoya Bayemahu, it'll be on that day, Lo Yir, there won't be light, Yekoros V'kipoin. Now, the simple meaning of it, the word yoker has a few different meanings. It means precious, it means heavy. Kipoin also has a couple of different meanings, one of them meaning freezing. So on a simple sense, Rashi says it means something like, on the pasuk, Rashi says it means something like on that day, there's not going to be a bright light. Or yokoros, there's just going to be kipoin, like a dim sort of light. That Adak says,
where is that? Like
neither here nor there, not bright and not dark either, but something in between, representing the idea. In other words, that at the time of Milchemes Gog and Magog, while it's going on, it's going to be like an in-between thing. Nobody's going to be sure how we're going to come out of this until Hashem comes in on the side of the Jewish people and defeats the goyim once and for all.
Where is the light going to dim out? Is it in Yerushalayim, the whole world,
in Yerushalayim specifically, or maybe in the whole world? I don't know. The pasuk doesn't go into that level of detail. It just says Vahoya Bayemahu, Lo Yir, Yekoros V'Kipoin. On that day there won't be light, Yekoros V'Kipoin. So what does that mean? So the Gemara explains, my Yekoros V'Kipoin. This refers to there's a light which is precious in this world, but is gonna be light and then cheap, Lo Olam Haba. Meaning, in other words, Sarashi says we're talking about the light of the sun. Right now, the light of the sun is considered something very big and important. You want to talk about how bright something is. You compare it to the sun. But so that's the word yokoros, meloshen yoker, like in Tilim, yoker. But well, yoker bein Hashem actually there means heavy. But whatever, the word yoker, one of the meanings of yoker is precious. Yitnu yokor levaalehen, for example, whatever. Anyway, the point is the word yoker can mean precious. So right now that world is that light is precious in Olam Hazeh. But the word v'kipoin, the Gemara is relating it to the word kofa, which means to float. What floats? Light things. So that implies that la'asid lave, the light of the sun, will be something light. In other words, it'll be something insubstantial compared to the great light that we're going to have la'asid lave. Marsha says actually it can refer to the light of Torah, which is the next explanation here in the Gemara, that you have things of Torah that are very difficult, that we consider very difficult, but the Yemos HaMashiach will be considered very easy. So Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Eilu Negoyim Va'Olos. This refers to the parts of Torah that talk about Negoyim, about the dinim of Tzaras, and Oholos, about the dinim of Tumas Oihel, which are very complicated stuff. So Sheyikorin Hein Ba'Olam Hazeh, Kfuyin Hein La'Olam Haba, same idea. They're very precious and very difficult in Olam Hazeh. The word Yoko can also mean heavy, but they're going to be easy and light La'Olam Haba, because then we'll all understand it. Kimola Earth Deyes Hashem. So again, one explanation is that we're talking about the light of the sun. We're talking about the Gashmiistic light. The other one is that we're talking about the Ruchniistic light of the Torah. Either way, right now it's Yukores, and then it'll be Kippurim. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omar, Eilu b'nei Adam. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says this refers to people, Sheyikorin hein ba'olam hazeh, Kfuyin hein la'olam haba, who are very precious and heavy and of great weight in this world. Rashi says, for example, rich people, important people, but they're not tovim lamakim, they're not good to Hashem. So Kfuyin hein la'olam haba. So in olam haba, it'll be shown that they are, that they're very light and insubstantial and not really worth that much. As we have the example, the Gemara says, "Ki hod Rabbi Yosef b'rei Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi cholash." Now, by the way, when we say "olam haba" over here, it means, as usual in the Gemara, "olam haba" has a bit of a double meaning. It means the world to which neshamas go, to which every person in neshama goes after 120, and it also means the future world of Mashiach's times. There's the famous machloek, this way that Rambam holds that even after Mashiach comes and after Tchias Emesim, eventually everybody's going to die, and the ultimate schar that everybody has is that their neshama enjoys the Ziv HaShechina, and the Ramban strongly disagrees with that and says that no, the ultimate reward, Limos HaMashiach, is for Neshamas in bodies. Chassidus agrees with the Ramban on that. So when we say over here, Kfuyin Hei La'olam Haba, we're talking about both kinds of Olam Haba. We're talking about the world that a person goes to after 120, and we're talking about also Limos HaMashiach. So Kiha did Rabbi Yosef b'rei did Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi cholash. As we have the example that Rabbi Yosef, the son of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, was sick, the isnigid, and he fainted. Rashi actually says gava uporcha ruchay. He expired and his neshama left him. So either it just means he fainted, or it means even more than that, like his neshama. Either way, the point is his neshama actually went up to Shemayim. Kihoder, when he returned, when he regained consciousness, Omale Avua Mai Chazis. So his father asks him, What did you see while you were up there? Omale, so Rabbi Yosef tells him, Olam Hafuch Ra'isi. I saw an upside down world. El Yonim Lamata V'Tachtonim Lamaila. The ones who are above in this world are down below over there, and vice versa. The ones who are down in this world are up over there. So, for example, those who are considered important in this world were considered unimportant in the next world, and vice versa. Omar Lo, said Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, tells him, "Bni olam borer ra'isa." What you saw is a clear world. What you saw is the way things are supposed to be, the way that a person actually is considered lamaila. Rabbeinu Hanano, by the way, brings that. Not over here, but in Baba Basra, you have this Gemara also that. In particular, Rabbi Yosef saw. You have throughout Shas. You have Shmuel is the teacher of Rabbi Yehuda, and he saw the other way around. He saw Rabbi Yehuda as the teacher, and Shmuel as the and Shmuel as the Talmud. And the reason for that is Tosfos brings in Baba Basra over there, because we learned in Shabbos there was one time a woman came to Shmuel complaining about some injustice that had been done to her, and Shmuel didn't do anything about it. And when Rabbi Yehuda asked him why, Shmuel said, because basically he said, it's not my department, she should be going to the Beis Din of Mount Ukva. In Shemayim, therefore, Tosfos says that's held against Shmuel. And therefore, since Rabbi Yehuda is the one who told him, who protested and told him, you should be listening to her case, then therefore he has the schus to be Shmuel's Rebbe La'olam Haba. So this is an example of that idea where things are upside down from our, to relative to our perspective in Olam Haba. But Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi is telling him that's really the way it is. Lamaila, that's really Rabbi Yehuda deserves to be Shmuel's Rebbe. So then Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi asks him, "Va'anan heichi hosam? What about us, Tamar Chachamim? How are we over there? Are we among the Elyonim down here? Or are we among the Tachtonim down here? And vice versa." So Rabbi Yosef says, "Ki heichi de isu anan hochinami isinan hosam." The same way as we are over here, so we are over there. People respect the Chachamim down here on earth, or at least in those days they did. And La'olam Haba, they also respect us. So we're not among the Oyonim and Tachtonim. We're respected in both worlds. And Rabbi Yosef continues with some snippets of news that he heard that he heard up there. I heard that they were saying in Shemayim, Ashrei mi shebola kan b'talmudei b'yodei. Happy is a person who comes here to Olam Haba, to Gan Eden, with his Talmud, with his learning in his hand. So one thing it means, in other words, Rabbi Hananel says, for example, that everywhere he goes, he's reviewing his learning. So therefore it's like biyode, it's in his hand, it's always fresh in his mind. Another explanation Rabbi Hananel says is that he makes sure that he acts according to the way he learns, that is maisim follow what he learned. So therefore it's as if like he brought all of his learning and all of his proofs for it with him. Marsha says in Bava Basra that it also means when a person writes his ideas, his Chiddush Torah, is a tremendous thing, that it's like he's bringing them in his hand to Olam Haba. There actually are a few stories of Chachamim who asked that they're who wrote down the Chiddush Torah but didn't want them to be published for one reason or another, and they actually asked them to be buried with them. But of course, we have many others who didn't and actually have them published and were able to learn them Adayim Azeh. In Tanya, it talks about the idea of this Ashrei mi shebola kan b'talmud b'yodei. If a person learns not l'shem shemayim, the Alter Rebbe talks about in Perek Mem of Tanya, then if he learns without ava v'yira, then his learning stays is like a bird without wings. It can't fly up above. It stays down here on earth. That's what you need ava v'yira as wings for it. So therefore, the Ashrei mi shebola kan b'talmud b'yodei also means that the person learns with Ava and Yira, and that way his learning comes with him, Lamaila, and that way after 120, it's with him up there where it should be. And Rabbi Yosef continues, V'shamayti shoyo imrim, I also heard that they were saying in Shamayim, Haruge malchus ein odem yochol lamed b'mchitzosan. Those who were killed by the government, Al-Kiddush Hashem, no person can stand in their mechitza, in their section of Gan Eden. They're greater than everybody else. So the question is, who is that Rabbi Yosef is talking about? Do you mean he's talking about Rabbi Akiva and the other Asura Harugi Malchus? What does that mean? Their only maila is that they're Harugi Malchus? Mishum Harugi Malchus v'tuloi? Is the reason why they're so special only because they're Harugi Malchus? Is that the only maila that you can say on them? No. Ela Harugi Lud. Rather, we're talking about the Jews who were killed in Lud, which Rashi brings that there were two brothers who were moiser nefesh on behalf of the Jewish people. What happened was that the daughter of the emperor was found dead. They accused all the Jewish people collectively of it, and the emperor was going to send his army to wipe out the Jews. And these two brothers, their names were Papus and Lulianus, took on themselves. They confessed to having done it in order to save all the rest of the Jewish people. So we're saying about them that they now they're not necessarily great Tamar Chachamim or Anshei Maise or whatever, but they have that tremendous chus of having been Moiser Nefesh for the whole Jewish people and being killed Al Kiddush Hashem, and therefore we're saying that nobody else is able just to be in their section of Gan Eden because they're so much higher than everybody else. Okay. So all of that was as a digression because the Gemara had brought this pasuk v'hoya bayemahu la'yia o yekores v'kipon, which again the purpose of bringing that was because we're going to darshan a later. Now we're going to get to a later pasuk in that same perek, which is going to talk about the future large size of Yerushalayim after Mashiach comes. So now we're going to talk about that. The pasuk says, the pasuk continues over there near the end of the perek, bayemahu on that day yia al mitzilos hasus kodesh l'Hashem. There will be on the mitzilos of the horse, kodesh l'Hashem. Now, the simple meaning of mitzilos is bells. And in fact, one of the explanations we're going to have here in the Gemara is going to be like that. But what does this mean? My mitzilos hasus, Omer Rabbi Shimon Levi, Asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu lohoisiv al Yerushalayim, Hashem in the future is going to enlarge the size of Yerushalayim, ad shasus rots umetzil, as far as a horse can run until and cast a shadow. Meaning, in other words, when in the morning you have a shadow which faces towards the west. Then in the afternoon you also do, but in the middle of the day the sun is almost directly overhead. Therefore, you don't cast a shadow, and neither does a horse. So therefore, in other words, the point is we're saying that the consider the distance that a horse can run from the beginning of the day until the middle of the day when it's not casting a shadow anymore, which is, you know, a horse can run a couple dozen miles an hour. So you're talking about 6 hours over there. You're talking a tremendous distance. That amount is how much Hashem is going to add to the size of the city of Yerushalayim. the amount of distance that a horse could run in the 6 hours from the morning until noon. So that's mitzilos. That's mitzilos meloshin sail, a shadow. And the vote is the good of Yerushalayim being so large is that then there's much more area to eat kodshim kalim in, because as we learned in the Mishnah, you can eat kodshim kalim anywhere in Yerushalayim. In fact, Marsha points out, if the city is going to be that large, how is anyone going to be able to build a wall around it to protect it? The answer is they won't. This is why the pasuk says, we say it in Tisha B'Av davening in Nachem, Vani Eyalonu, Hashem Chomas Eish Saviv. Hashem says, I will be a fiery wall around Yerushalayim, because Yerushalayim will be so physically large that it would be impossible for any person to build a wall to surround it. Okay, so that's one explanation. This is when Mashiach comes, we're talking about. Rabbi Lozoim, Kol Metzilos, Shetolon Lasus Bein Einov, Yekodesh Lashem. Rabbi Yezer says it means all of the bells that they put on a horse to decorate it, that they put between its eyes, on its forehead, all of those are going to be Kodesh Lashem, all of those are going to be Kodesh, and they're going to be donated to the Beis Mikdash. Because the point is, in other words, people like this, people decorate their horses because they trust in their horses, etc. But in Mashiach's times, they won't be doing that. So they'll take all of those decorations that they decorated their horses, or, you know, to put it in modern terms, right? You have all these people who decorate their cars with fancy rims and all kinds of things like that. So Lossid Lover, they won't do that. They'll be donating those things to the Beis Mikdash.
Eretz Yisrael is not large enough in width to cover more than 72 miles from Yerushalayim to the sea.
Well, first of all, in fact, the Pesukim describe how the borders of Eretz Yisrael itself, according to many understandings, are going to expand. One example of this is, for example, Gan Eden is where, you know, we talk about in Parshas Bereishis, Gan Eden, where Adam and Chava were, is an actual physical place, right? But has anybody found it? No. Because there's an idea, there's sort of a place which is gashmiistic and not gashmiistic at the same time. It belongs to our world, but it's like sort of like a it's invisible to our regular gashmiistic eyes until the appropriate time. It, you know, it's a similar kind of thing when we say, for example, Yaakov Avinu Loi Meis, where the Rebbe talks about there's a concept that on a certain level Yaakov is alive even begashmius, even though on another gashmiistic level he was actually dead, and they embalmed him and buried him and so forth. So there are different levels within Gashmius itself. So within that itself is a level on which Eretz Yisrael will be larger than what you can measure with a map or something, and it'll have room enough for an enlarged Yerushalayim like this. Yeah, I mean, you know, we can't get too long into this. We have a lot of ground to cover, but there is this concept that the Gemara tells us in Gittin that Eretz Yisrael is like a deer's skin. When the Jewish people are in it, it expands, and when not, then it shrinks. So yeah, okay, onward. So we have Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi saying that it means that Yerushalayim is going to expand to the distance where a horse can run for half the day. Rabbi Lazar is saying it means that all the bells that now people decorate their horses with will be given to Hashem. Marsha says actually it also relates to the previous one, because what's one purpose of the bells on a horse is to give it some shade for its eyes. So Lossid Lover, they won't need that. Yeah, it could also be to watch out, but it's also to shade the horse's eyes. Rabbi Yechonon Amar, Kol Biza Shaboizes in Yisrael Ad Shor Shasus Rotzel Matzel Yekodesh LaHashem. Rabbi Yechonon says it means all the spoils from Milchemes Gog and Magog that the Jewish people are going to be capturing from the army of Gog and Magog Ad Shor Shasus Rotzel Matzel, again for half the day from the morning until Chatzos. All of that amount of spoils, Yekodesh LaHashem, will be donated to Hekdesh. So the Gemara says, Bishleim Lamander Omar Kol Biza Shabaz Yisrael. Okay, according to Rabbi Yechonon, who says that the Pasuk is telling us how rich everything is going to be, that even that there's going to be so much spoils that are given to the Beis Mikdash, that the amount that you can get in the amount in 6 hours of the day. So then Hainu Dichtiv, then that explains. The pasuk continues, V'hoya asiros b'veis Hashem kamizrokim lefneim mizbeach. The pots in the house of Hashem will be like the mizrokim in front of the mizbeach, meaning the mizrokim that were used to sprinkle the blood of the korbanos and whatever were made out of silver and gold. the regular pots were not. They were made out of copper or other cheap materials like that. La'asid lava, the Beis HaMikdash, is going to be so rich because so many people are going to be giving it nedavos that even the pots are going to be made out of gold and silver. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, we understand the connection between the first and the second half of the pasuk, because the amount of spoils that they're going to be gathering for 6 hours of the day is all going to be given to Hekdesh. Therefore, Hekdesh is going to be so rich that everything in the Beis HaMikdash, even the pots, is going to be made out of silver and gold. But if you say either of the other explanations, that it means Yerushalayim is going to be enlarged, or it means that all the bells of the horses are going to be given to Hekdesh. My v'hoya hasidus b'beis Hashem. Then what's the connection between the first half of the pasuk and the second half? The answer is according to that milta achriti kamar. According to that, the second half of the pasuk is telling us another point. Besides the fact that Yerushalayim is going to be enlarged, or besides the fact that nobody will be decorating their horses with bells anymore, and instead they're going to give them to Hekdesh, a separate thing, the Jewish people are going to be rich, and they're going to be menadev, and they're going to be bringing a large amount of things to the Beis HaMikdash, so much so that the pots will be able to be made out of gold and silver. So the Gemara continues, again, we can understand, according to Rabbi Yechon's opinion, that the Pasuk is telling us about the amount of spoils that the Jewish people are going to collect and give them to the Beis HaMikdash. Then we understand the next pasuk continues. The last pasuk of that perek says, there won't be any more knani, which the Gemara is going to say in a second, means a merchant in the house of Hashem Tzvakos. In other words, the point is that because the gizborim won't need to be buying and selling things with the money of Hekdesh, because there's going to be so much riches from the spoils. Meaning, in other words, like this, the point is, there's going to be so much spoils. Among them is going to be a lot of silver and gold, and even silver and gold pots, to the point where the Gizbarim are not going to have to sell things of Hekdesh in order to buy such pots. So then we understand that. But again, if you say that the Pasuk is telling us that Yerushalayim is going to be enlarged, or that people are going to be donating the bells of their horses to Hekdesh, my Veloya Knani. So what does Veloya Knani have to do with it? In what sense is it going to be that there doesn't have to be merchandising done with the Beis HaMikdash anymore? After all, aren't the Gizbarim still going to have to sell things that are given to the Beis HaMikdash that they don't need and buy other things instead? So Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah ain't kan oni. So Rabbi Yirmiyah says, because in that case, according to that, the word knani doesn't mean a merchant. We learn in that case, we darshan the word veloya knani means ain't kan oni. There will not be any poor people anymore because everybody's going to be rich from the spoils of Milchamas Gogamogog. It can be darshan knani kan oni. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, Knani Manolan de Ikri Tagar, where do we see that a merchant is called Knani? That we said before that the first possible explanation was that there won't be any merchants in the Beis HaMikdash anymore. So like this, Vayarsham Yehuda Bas Ish Knani. The Pasuk says that Yehuda saw the daughter of a Knani man and he married her. So we have to figure, my Knani. Ilema Knani Mamash, do you mean literally a Knani? How could that be? Efshaba Avraham v'hizeret Yitzchak. Avraham warned Yitzchak warned Eliezer about Yitzchak not to marry from Bnei Sknan. Yitzchak v'hizeret Yaakov. Yehuda also ozel v'nosiv. Yehuda is going to then go and marry the daughter of a Knani man. Ela Amar Rav Shimon Lakish bas Gavra Tagra means that her father was a merchant, and the word Knani means a merchant. Dichtiv, as you have a pasuk, Knan b'yodei Moizne Mirma. Knan has in his hands unfair scales. So we see that Knan over there means a merchant, and that the Pasuk is criticizing merchants who do dishonest business with dishonest scales. Or you have another pasuk where the word Knan also means merchants. Says about Sir Asher Secharehas Sorim that her merchants are princes. Kin Oneha again means her merchants. Nichbade Oretz are the important people in the land. So we see again that the word Knan or Kinon means merchants. So the same thing over here. V'loya Knani Oed. One meaning of it is there won't be any merchants in the Beis HaMikdash La'asid Lavi. By the way, you have Rashi in Parashas Vayeshev mentions two opinions when it says whether that Benoisav, that Yaakov's daughters, his sons and daughters, came to try to comfort him after Yosef was missing. So and Rashi brings the two explanations over there, whether it means the sisters of the Shvatim or whether it means Knanios. So the Medrash doesn't necessarily have to agree with the Gemara over here. The Medrash could mean literally that they actually married women from Knan and then disagree with the Gemara over here. Fine. You have Midrashas Chalukas sometimes, Marsha says. All right. Another pasuk from that same section in Parshas in that Nevuah of Zechariah. That's the Haftorah on the first day Sukkot. The pasuk says, "V'hoi Hashem l'malach akol ha'aretz." Hashem will be king over the earth. "B'yemahu yiyah Hashem echad u'shma echad." On that day, Hashem will be one, and His name will be one. So, what does that mean? "Otu ha'idna lav echad." Who? What do you mean? Hashem will be one then? Isn't Hashem one now? Means that this world is not like Olam Haba. Ha'olam Hazeh, in this world, al besuras tovus omer baruch hatov ha'metiv. For good news, you say the baruch hatov ha'metiv, and val besuras rois, and for the opposite, chas v'shalom, omer baruch dayna emes. So either way, you acknowledge Hashem, but you say with different words, because after all, it doesn't look like good to us, even though we know that ein ra yod milamayla. But in the future world, it'll all be atov ha'metiv, because, so Rashi says there won't be any bad news, and a way of understanding, in other words, at that point, we'll see the truth, we'll see with mitfleshik ha'ogen, how everything that Hashem does is good, and therefore there won't be any bad news to say dayina emesan. I'll derech like a famous story with Reb Zusha Anipolo, for example, where they asked him, how does he manage, he's so poor and everything, and he says, I don't even feel there's anything wrong. To him, everything that he received, Milamayla, he perceived as good. So he had that kind of mentality that we're all going to have La'asid Lavi. And there's a famous letter where the Rebbe writes to the president of Israel at that time, Yitzchak Ben Tzvi. He tells him that ever since I was a child, I always have this vision of Mashiach's times, and when in particular we're going to be able to say, as it says in the pasuk, Oidcha Hashem ki anafta bi. I thank you, Hashem, that you were angry at me. In other words, La'asid Lavi will realize how even the anger was all good, and understand what the purpose of it all was. The Rebbe is saying on himself that ever since I was a child, I've had this vision of how it should be. He's just explaining over there in the letter, because he doesn't refer to Ben Tzvi by the title Nasi, which they use for the president of Israel, and he explains why, because I feel that the term Nasi is really only appropriate for Mashiach, that what we have now is not anything like that. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, continuing. So that's what it means, Hashem Echad, that nowadays, like, so to speak, we perceive Hashem in multiple ways, good and sometimes not so good. La'asid Lavi will perceive that everything Hashem does comes from the one Hashem, and it's all good. Ushmoy Echad, so what do you mean his name is one? My Echad, what do you mean his name will be one? Otto Idna Lav Shmoy Echadu, isn't Hashem's name one now also? No. There's a difference between Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. Again, Olam Haba over here means more the time of Mashiach rather than the world of Neshamas after 120. Ha'olam Hazeh nichta b'yud kei v'nikra b'alef dalad. In Olam Hazeh, we write Hashem's name, yud kei vav kei, but we can't pronounce it that way. We have to pronounce it aleph dalad. Aleph dalad nun yud. Aber la'olam haba, kulay echad, in la'olam haba, in Mashiach's times, it'll be kulay echad, nikra b'yud kei v'nichta b'yud kei. It'll be able to be read and written as yud kei vav kei, because then we'll have, then we'll perceive the truth of Elokus, then we'll be on a level to be able to actually pronounce Hashem's name as it's written, because Elokus will be revealed in this world. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, speaking about the name Yudke Vavke, Sava Rava Lemidusha Bapirka. Rava one time thought to give a drasha about it, in his public drasha, about how to pronounce the name Yudke Vavke and the deeper ideas, the Kabbalistic ideas and whatever associated with it. Amaleahu Sava, but a certain old person told him, Yesh Omrim that that's Eliyahu Anavi. La'elam Ksiv, the Pasuk says, Zeshmi La'elam. Olam in last week's parasha, and the word la'olam is written without a vav, so you can dash in la'elam or la'alim, meaning that the pasuk is saying this should be hidden. So we write yod kei vav kei, but it has to be hidden how to pronounce it. The Gemara points out, Rav Avinah pointed out a contradiction in this connection. The pasuk says zesh mi la'olam, and then it says v'zez zichri l'dur dur. So one problem with it, Rashi says, is that zeshmi implies la'elam, as we just said, la'olam la'alim means to hide it. On the other hand, zeh zichri la'dor implies that you should mention it, that you should be mentioning Hashem's name in all generations. Another point Rashi says is once it says zeshmi, of course zeh zichri. What else are you supposed to call Hashem if not by his name? And in Kiddushin, Rashi says another point, when it says Zeshmi, Zezichri, it sounds like we're talking about two different names. This is my name, this other one is my Zichri. So what is it? So Omer Hakod means Omer Hakadosh Baruch Hu, means Hashem is telling Moshe loik shani nichtav ani nikra. It means that I'm not written the same way as I'm pronounced. Nichtav ani biyudke v'nikra ani ba'alef dalad. That my name is written yudke vavke, but it's pronounced aleph dalad nun yud. So in that sense, in other words, zeshmi, this yudke vavke is my true name, but la'alem, it's to be hidden. V'zeh zichri, the way I'm to be mentioned, l'dor v'dor, for all generations, is with the name aleph dalad nun yud. And so forth with the other explanations. Rabbi Tzadik HaKohen, by the way, points out a nice vote. He says, our perek began with Elu Ovrin. These are the kinds of chametz we have to get rid of on Pesach. And we talked about at the beginning of the perek that those various things represent the four Malchias. We had Kuta Chababli and Sheikhar Amodi and so forth, representing Bavel and Modai and so forth. And now we finish off the perek with the ultimate thing. Once all of that ra is removed from the world, then you have Hashem Echad or Shema Echad. So it's a very appropriate ending to the Hadron Aloch Elu Ovrin and Hadron Aloch of everything that needs to be gotten rid of in the world, all the klippas and everything that needs to be gotten rid of in the world when we have Hashem Echad or Shema Echad. Yeah, you burn it with the chametz, yeah. Okay. So now this next perek is going to talk about, most of this next perek is going to talk about minhagim. Because the first minhag that we're going to talk about is the minhag of is about a certain minhag of not working on Erev Pesach. But from there, we're going to talk about minhagim in general and about the dinim of what are the dinim about minhagim in different places and what you have to do when you're traveling from one place to another and other things like that. I once saw an interesting thing that you have. There's many different types of minhagim. You have all the way from minhag Yisrael Torahi. You have minhag noshim, which is something that women have a minhag to do something, and the poskim accept that. Then you have, for example, minhag shtus, and all the way down to minhag osias gehenim. So like you have many different types of minhag. We're not going to be talking about the minhag osias gehenim here so much, although we'll see. But yeah, the point is there are many different types of minhagim. You got to know which is which. Which are the ones that you have to keep al pi halacha and you have to respect versus which ones we'll see. Okay, so the point is like this. We're going to see in the so the Mishnah says Makam shenagu lasis malacha ba'avi pesach marchatzois in places where they have the minhag to do malacha on erev Pesach until chatzois oisin, then they're allowed to do that until chatzois, as we're going to say in a minute, you're not allowed to do after chatzois at all. Makam shenagu shaloi lasis ein oisin, places where they have the minhag not to do, then you're not allowed to do. Now, why are you not allowed to do malacha on Erev Pesach after Chatzos? Rashi says the reason is because you have things to do then. You have to get rid of the remainder of your chametz, because midaraisa, you have to get rid of it by Chatzos. You have to shecht your Pesach, you have to bake matzah, and so forth, because you can't delay the Seder. You have to start the Seder as early as possible so the kids don't fall asleep. So therefore, you're not supposed to be doing work on Erev Pesach, because then you're going to get busy with your work and forget about all that. Tosfos gives a different reason from the Yerushalmi, that the reason is that in that case, shouldn't that apply to every Erev Yom Tov? The difference is, no, that Erev Pesach is you're bringing from Chatzos and on is the time to be bringing the Korban Pesach. In general, the day when a person brings a Korban, he's also b'malacha. And the vote is, with most korbanos, you say, then the rule applies all day, because you could bring the korban as early in the morning as you want, right after the Talmud. The Pesach, which we're going to learn in the next perek, the earliest time to bring it is only after Chatzos, then therefore the din only begins from after Chatzos, which then you have a discussion among the poskim, well, does that apply nowadays, since nowadays we don't have a korban Pesach? So yesh omrim that yes, once the takana was made, then it continues to be that way even now. And yesh omrim that yeah, and maybe this isser of malacha on Erev Pesach doesn't apply nowadays because there's no korban Pesach. But again, you still have Rashi's reason that you have to be preparing things for Pesach. Anyway, the Mishnah is telling us you're not allowed to do malacha Erev Pesach after Chatzos. So there were places where in addition they had the minhag not to do malacha in the morning either as a siag for it, and places that not. So each place can keep their own minhag, a place where they have the minhag to work, where you're allowed to work, and a place where they don't, you're not. It is in Hilchas Yom Tov, so it was in. It is in Hilchas Yom Tov, so it was in. It was in Perek Echad of Rambam, relatively recently. Yeah. Haholach mimakom sheoisin lamakom shein oisin. If a person is going from a place where they have the minhag to work in the morning of Erev Pesach to a place where they don't, or mimakom shein oisin lamakom sheoisin, or vice versa. So we're not talking about that he's moving permanently. We're talking about he's visiting. He lives in a place. You know, in New York, let's say they have the minhag to do malacha on Erev Pesach morning, but then he's traveling, let's say, to Yerushalayim where they don't. So then, or vice versa. So then, noisin and olav chumrei makom shiyatzim isham v'chumrei makom shahalach l'sham. We put on him the chumras of both places, the place where he came from and the place where he's going to. So in either way, he wouldn't be able to do malacha. V'al yeshana odem epnei machlokas. A person should not do any different than what people locally do because of machloikas. Now, the Gemara is going to point out, but that seems to be a contradiction then. You're telling me, therefore, that if a person is going from a place where they don't do malacha to a place where they do, then it sounds like from this, it sounds, first we were saying he shouldn't do malacha because in his hometown they don't do malacha. Now we're saying, Ali Shana Adam, now machloikas. So does that mean he should work in order not to create machloikas? So we'll see in the Gemara about that. So we'll see in the Gemara about that. Okay. Kayotzeboy, the Mishnah says similarly, a similar kind of thing as far as where a person is coming from versus where they're going, and the dinim about that. If a person is bringing peiros shvius, now you have like this. We know there's a concept of beer of peiros shvius. That the Torah tells us that once you reach a point where a certain kind of produce is not available in the fields growing wild for wild animals to eat, at that point you have to do beer of any of that kind of produce that you have in your house. For example, let's say you have grapes that grew during Shemitah, but so usually they're harvested at the end of the summer, but you also have some of them remain on the vines. And then they remain on the vines throughout the winter. When are they gone? Is around Pesach time. So Pesach time of the next year, of the eighth year, you would have to take any grapes or wine of Shemitah that you have in your house and and do beer with it. The Rambam holds that beer means actually destroying it, eating or destroying it. Tosfos holds later on in the sugya that it just means putting it out of your house and declaring it hefker. Then afterwards, if you want to take it back from hefker, then you're able to do that. Anyway, so you have this din of beer. Now you have different places. The produce is gone from the fields at different times. Let's say you might have one place where there's no more grapes in the fields by Purim, and another place where there still are some on the vines until Pesach. So hamoylech peiros shvius v'makom shekolu l'makom shleikolu. So suppose a person, let's say, has grapes of Pesach and of Shemitah, and he took them, let's say, from a place where they're gone from the where they're gone by Purim time, and he goes to a place the Mokum Shalai Kolu, it's after Purim and they still have grapes on the vines over there. Or even Mokum Shalai Kolu the Mokum Shakolu, or vice versa, Chayev Levayer, then he has to be Mavirat because again you have Chumrei Mokum Shiyotza Misham. So Mefoshim explained, we're not talking about where, for example, where let's say he left after Purim from the other place and he had with him grapes that he shouldn't have had, then for sure he has to be Mavir them. There was already a chiyuv for being Mavir them at home. That doesn't get taken away because that's not just a chumra of Makam. Here we're talking about, in other words, where let's say before Purim he had grapes with him that came from that other place where they're gone by Purim. And now he's traveling to another place temporarily where they're gone by Pesach. So then we're saying, nevertheless, he still has Chumrei Mokum, Shiyotzim Isham, he has to do beer of them by Purim, because where he comes from and where these grapes grew, then Purim was the time when they're gone. Rabbi Yehuda Oymet Seva Hobi Lacha Af Ata. Rabbi Yehuda says, go and bring for yourself also you. Now, what does Rabbi Yehuda mean by that? We have no idea. At this point, we're going to learn on Dafnun Beis. We're going to learn on Dafnun Beis in a couple of days what Rabbi Yehuda means by that line in the Mishnah. So the Gemara starts off, my iria arve psachim. Why are we mentioning in our Mishnah? So we're saying in our Mishnah, Erev Pesach, the morning until Chatzos, it depends on minhag. Some people have the minhag to do work, some not, implying that Erev Pesach afternoon, you're not allowed to do work at all. There's no minhag, it's a halacha. But why mention Davka arve psachim? I feel like arve Shabbos is for arve yom tovim nami. Wouldn't the same thing apply to Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov? Any Erev Shabbos and any Erev Yom Tov. D'tanya ha'osa malacha ba'arve Shabbos is we learn in a braisa that if a person does malacha on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov past mincha, he won't see a simin bracha from that work. Now, at this point, the Gemara is assuming, so there's a few possibilities. One possibility is that the Gemara is assuming over here that when we say minam mincha olamayla, it doesn't mean exactly. It means from chatzos and on. Befrat also, there's mincha gdola and mincha ktana. Mincha gdola is 6.5 hours into the day. Now Rashi over here says mina mincha means teisha shoyis mechza, but on the marshal and marsha say that that's a mistake. In Rashi, it's supposed to be shesh shoyis mechza, meaning mincha gdola. So therefore, if you have from Mincha Gdola, which is already a half hour after Chatzos, and maybe also you have to have Samoch L'Mincha, like we learned in Masechta Shabbos, so already you have from Chatzos and on, if a person does Malacha, he's not going to see a Simin Bracha. And that applies to every Erev Shabbos and Yom Tov. So why are we singling out Erev Pesach? In other words, one way of understanding the question is that the Mishnah didn't have to mention at all that that places where they have the minhag versus don't have the minhag to work. You should say, in other words, that in other words, it's obvious you can't do malacha on Erev Pesach. So actually, not that it shouldn't have mentioned the minhag. It didn't have to mention until Chatzos. The Mishnah could have mentioned places where they have the minhag to do work on Erev Pesach versus not. We ourselves would understand that that can only mean until Chatzos, because after Chatzos, you're anyway not allowed to do it on the grounds of it's Erev Shabbos. Or Erev Yom Tov. So that's one way of understanding the question. So the answer is Hosam and Amincha Lamilo, who do also Samoch L'Mincha Loi. The difference is that when it comes to Erev Shabbos and every other Erev Yom Tov, it's only Hosam and Amincha Lamilo. We don't say that it's also Samoch L'Mincha. Samoch L'Mincha Loi, a half hour before Mincha, you would be allowed to. Hosam Mechatzois, whereas over here, the deadline is Chatzois. The exactly Chatzos rather than half an hour later Mincha Gdola. That's one possibility. So that therefore the Mishnah had to stress places where they have the minhag to do malacha up to Chatzos, because beyond Chatzos, especially on Erev Pesach, you're not allowed to do malacha. Whereas every other Yom Tov, you would have a later deadline. Inami, or another possibility, the difference is Hasim Simon Bracha Udlechazi, with other Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov, it's only the person wouldn't see a simin bracha from it. Abel shamusi loy misham sinan loy, but we wouldn't put him in cherem if he's over on that. Hocha, but here, when it comes to work on Erev Pesach, shamusi nami misham sinan loy, we would actually put him in cherem for being over on that, because for the reasons that we said on Amud Aleph, either because you're supposed to be spending your time getting ready for the Seder, or Shechting the Korban Pesach, or because it was the time of Shechting the Korban Pesach, and therefore a person is also to do Malacha during the time when their Korban is being brought. With that said, it does say in Shulchan Aruch that this kind of thing, we're talking about Malacha, obviously it doesn't mean all the 39 Malachas, because preparing for Pesach itself includes some of those Malachas. So it means, in other words, like Poshet, hard physical labor of the kind that a person does on a regular day. It doesn't include, for example, it doesn't include business, it says in Shulchan Aruch. So a person can do business on Erev Shabbos past Chatzos, although of course it still is good that if they don't end right, you know, they don't end right as Shabbos is coming in. Of course, there was a matter of Tosfos Shabbos. Okay. The Gemara says Gufa. Getting back to, we said, if a person does malacha on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov from Mincha and on, which again, according to how Marsha and Marshal understand Rashi, we're talking about from Mincha Gdola and on, although there are Yesh Omim that's talking about from Mincha Tana, which is 9.5 hours into the day. Anyway, Uvah Matzoi Shabbos, also if a person does malacha on Matzoi Shabbos, Uvah Matzoi Yom Tov, Uvah Matzoi Yom Kippurim, and Matzah Yom Tov or Matzah Yom Kippurim, or V'chol Makam Sheyesh Sham Nidnu Davera, or any other time when there is a hint of Avera. Rashi says Nidnu means Remez Avera, like a hint of Avera, and the Gemara interjects that means, when is there a hint of Avera, means La'asuya Tainas Tzibur, means to include a Tainas Tzibur, although any Tainas Tzibur that they make for example, for rain or whatever, although Hagoyis HaGurah changes it to Tisha B'Av. Anyway, Einer Roya Simen Bracha La'olam, a person does Malacha at such times, he's not going to see a Simen Bracha from that Malacha. Now, as far as Matzah Shabbos, actually, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that really, when we're talking about that you're not supposed to do malacha, Matzah Shabbos and Matzah Yom Tov, we mean before davening is over. Once davening is over, then it's fine to do malacha, which is one reason, by the way, why we have Vihi Noyam at the end of Ma'ariv on Matzah Shabbos on most Matzoi Shabbos, is in order to extend davening a little bit so that we have a little extra time when malacha is also and we're doing Tosfos Shabbos. Another point of some of the poskim also say that we're talking about primarily before Havdalah. If a person does malacha after Havdalah, even though it's Matzoi Shabbos, then there's no problem with that. With that said, this is the idea behind extending Shabbos and then keeping Shalosh Shudos going longer and having a Malav Malka, etc. is all based on this idea of extending out Shabbos and not rushing to do malacha on Matzoi Shabbos. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Yesh Zoriz V'Nisker. Sometimes you have a person who is a Baal Malacha. He's eager to do work. He's quick to do work. V'nisko, and he gains by that. The Yesh Zoriz, V'nif said, on the other hand, you have somebody who is eager and quick to do work, but he ends up losing out by it. Yesh Shuffle V'nisko, then you have a person who's lazy and is not so quick to do work, but V'nisko, but they gain by it. The Yesh Shuffle V'nif said, and then you have a person who's lazy and ends up losing out by it. So what are examples of all four of those in terms of what we were talking about, doing Malacha or not doing Malacha on Friday? So Zoriz V'nisko, what's a person who's Zoriz, who's quick and eager to do work and gains by it? The Ovid, Kula Shabsa, like Ovid B'Male Shabsa, would be a case where he does Malacha throughout the week, but he doesn't do Malacha on Erev Shabbos. Like we said before, because of Kavod Shabbos, he stops work in the middle of the day on Friday, or maybe even earlier, maybe even he's Machmer on himself and doesn't even do on the morning of Friday. Whatever the case, the point is, then he's eager to do work because the rest of the week is a hard worker, but Shabbos, he stops. L'Kavod Shabbos, therefore, he gets a schar for that. So he's Zoriz and Nisker. I saw, by the way, in one of my kids' books recently, an interesting story about somebody in later life. He was a Rav in Yerushalayim, but in earlier life he was a bricklayer or something like that. He was a contractor. So one Erev Shabbat, he used to always stop work on whatever buildings he was working on Erev Shabbat by Chatzos, like we're saying over here. So one week they came and told him, you left some barrels of mortar of cement uncovered, and if we don't cover them before Shabbos, they're gonna get wound. It's going to rain over Shabbos. And he tells them, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to do anything about it. It's Erev Shabbos after Chatzos, and I don't do Malacha then, even that kind of Malacha. The upshot was, he came back on Sunday and found that everything was in good shape. What happened was the contractor next door, who was not a Frum Yid, he had his workers working on Shabbos as well, and he told them to cover the barrels because of the rain, and they covered the wrong barrels. Instead of covering their own, they covered his, the Rav's barrels. So it was Hashgacha Pratis that Hashem arranged that he wouldn't lose out from this, that he stopped working on Erev Shabbos by Chatzos. Anyway, so he would be an example of this Zoriz V'nisko. He's working hard and not slacking off throughout the week, but comes Erev Shabbos, Chatzos, then that's it. Work time is over. Then Shuffle V'nisko, then Zoriz V'nifsad. What's an example of a person who's eager and a hard worker, but he loses out? The Ovid Kula Shabbos of Ovid B'Male Shabbos. He works hard during the week and he works on Erev Shabbos after Chatzos, so then he's losing out by that, because we said that work, he's not going to see a Simen Bracha from. Meaning, when we say he's not going to see a Simen Bracha, it means, for example, he's going to end up, the Eibishter can arrange that he's going to have other kinds of expenses, on other kinds of unexpected expenses, doctor's bills or whatever, where that money is going to end up going for that instead. Then you have Shuffle V'nisko. You have a person who's lazy, but he gains from it. Means Delay Ovid Kule Shabsa V'Loy Ovid B'Male Shabsa. He's not working the rest of the week either, and he's not working on Erev Shabbos after Chatzos. So he's not doing it L'Shem Mitzvah. It's a mitzvah Shaloy L'Shma, but it's still a mitzvah, and therefore he gets a schar from the Eibishter for that. Shuffle V'nifsad, and then you have a person who's lazy and he loses out. Deloy Ovid Kule Shabbos of Ovid B'Male Shabbos, where he does things exactly backwards. The rest of the week he's too lazy and doesn't really want to work. And then all of a sudden, Erev Shabbos after Chatzos, he realizes that he has to work. Maybe because he realizes he doesn't have money for Shabbos, whatever it is. All of a sudden, there he bestirs himself and goes to work. So now he's losing out both. He's lazy during the rest of the week, and he's losing out that he does that the money that he's earning on Erev Shabbos then after Chatzos is going to end up being lost to him. He's not going to see a Simon Bracha in it. So Omar Rava. So Rava says in this connection, Hani Noshi de Mechuza, the women from Mechuza, Afagab Delay Avdin Avidta B'Male Shabsa, even though they're not doing work on Erev Shabbos, and the reason for that is Mishuma Fan Kursahu, because they're very pampered, they're rich ladies, and they sit around all day doing nothing. Because after all, we see it's not, they're not working on Erev Shabbos because of covered Shabbos. They're not working on Shabbos because they don't work any day of the week. Nevertheless, they're in the category of the third group in our Braisa, where they're Shuffle V'nisko. They may be lazy, but they still get a schar for it, because the fact is they are honoring Shabbos by not working on Erev Shabbos after Chatzos. At one point, as Mefarshim say, in other words, that Rava wants us to know. It's not like in the case of the shuffle, for example, he physically could work. You see sometimes you have such a person who bestirs himself and works out of Shabbos. He's just lazy and doesn't. Whereas these women from Mechuzah, it's more like their whole lifestyle is based on not working. Nevertheless, he's still saying, so you would think then in that case, the fact that they're not working on Erev Shabbos, there's no mitzvah in it at all. Nevertheless, he's still saying still it's Shaloi Lashma, but nevertheless, there's still a schar for it. In that connection, Rava pointed out a contradiction between two psukim. Ksiv ki gadol ad shamayim chastecha. In Kapitel Nun Zayin of Tilim, David HaMelech says, your chesed is great until shamayim, meaning implying that the chesed goes up to shamayim but stops there. Uchtiv, but then in Kapitel Kuf Ches, it repeats the same pasuk, but it says, ki gadol me'al shamayim chastecha. Your chesed is greater above the shamayim. So what is it? Does it go up to shamayim and stop there? Or does it go even past shamayim? So Hokeit said, "Kan ba'osin l'shma, but kan ba'osin shaloi l'shma." It depends whether the person is doing the mitzvah l'shma or not. If he's doing it l'shma, then it goes me'al l'shamayim, and if he doesn't, then it only goes ad shamayim. V'chid Rabbi Yehuda, like what Rabbi Yehuda says, "De'omer Rabbi Yehuda, amar Rav, lo'olam yasek adam b'torah v'mitzvahs." A person should always occupy himself with learning Torah and doing mitzvahs. Afal pi shaloi l'shma, even if he's doing it shaloi l'shma, shemetoch shaloi l'shma ba'l'shma, because from doing it shaloi l'shma, the person will eventually come to doing it l'shma. So now Tosfos explains over here and in a few other places that there's different kinds of shaloi l'shma. There's a kind of shaloi l'shma, which the Gemara in Brachas tells us, noyach lo shaloi nivra, a person would be better off not having been born if he's going to do mitzvahs l'shma like that. That, Tosfos says, is talking about where he's learning in order to hisyaher, to pride himself, or lakanter, and in order to bother other people with it, or lakapeach as chavera ba'alacha, like to cut off his friends in halacha, like to say to them, I'm better than you, I know more than you don't know what you're talking about, that sort of thing. You can also have, for example, where a person uses his Torah as a weapon, like, for example, having learned the halachas of Chosh and Mishpat, let's say he uses those in order to be able to be unethical in business and know that he can get away with it al pi halacha because what he's doing is technically allowed. Those are the kinds of things where we're saying noyach lo shel nivra. On the other hand, here we're talking about, like, for example, like we had before, about the shuffle. He's not working all week long because he's lazy. He's not meaning anything bad. He's just lazy. Nevertheless, it's still a mitzvah shaloi l'shma, and we're saying he should do that, and eventually he'll come to l'shma. In Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about this point, that one meaning of it is also that mitoich, because with mitoich also means within. Within the shaloi l'shma, there is a kavana l'shma, because every yid deep down wants to do the ratzin of the Eibishter. So within his shaloi l'shma, there is a l'shma hidden in there, and you have to bring it out. The Alter Rebbe mentions the point over there. Eventually, lo yidach mimenu nidach. Every mitzvah and every Torah that a person learns eventually has to come to its shleimus. Eventually, it has to be whether begilgul zeh or begilgul acher. It has to be elevated to elikus. So therefore, but a person still has to work on it now, and eventually, it's not going to be lost. Eventually, it will be brought up to where it's supposed to. It will be brought up me'al shamayim, even if now it's only ad shamayim. It's brought, by the way, that the Rashbatz, who was a very famous mashpia in Lubavitch, he was also the Friedrich Rebbe's teacher for a while. When he would teach that part of Tanya, where it says at the end of Perek Lamentes that lo yidach mimenu nidach, and either begilgul zeh or begilgul acher, he's going to end up doing the right thing. When he would teach that, he would start crying, and he would say, you know, look, the Alter Rebbe is telling us whether, you know, either now or later, eventually it's going to happen. You're going to have to be acting l'shma. You're going to end up being l'shma. Do it now rather than having to go through all of that, and then eventually you're going to get there one way or the other. Do it the direct way l'chatchila. Anyway, so this. Same thing over here. We're saying the ideal is a person should be doing l'shma, but even if not, the person should still be doing shaloi l'shma and realize that lo yudach mimenu nidach, and eventually there will be, in some way, that Torah and those mitzvahs will be able to be elevated to elikus. With davening, for example, it's brought, the Alter Rebbe brings someplace else in Tanya, that a person often davens without kavana, but if a person, if there can be assembled from a person's tefillas, even you have, let's say, a word here, a phrase there, whatever, every time it happens, you know, you have a person davens with kavana, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, let's say, but even during a weekday, sometimes you have a person feels a little bit of extra kavana and davens a certain word or a certain phrase. Eventually, if a whole tefillah can be assembled like that for throughout the year from the different places where a person had kavana, then it's mila, all those tefillas of that year, to the Eibishter. So So therefore, all those other tefillos that he davened shaloi lishma, but eventually one time, a little here, a little there, he has lishma, and therefore it brings them all up. And the same thing with the similar concept with limud haTorah. The Alter Rebbe says when he learns the same thing over again lishma, then it's maila what he learned before shaloi lishma, and so forth. Continuing on the topic of things that a person doesn't see a simin bracha for, Tanan Rabbanan, hamatzapir l'schar ishtoi, if a person is looking forward to the schar that his wife makes, in other words, his wife is going to support the family, as we're going to say in a second, so he's waiting for that, he's expecting that they're going to live off that, virei chayim, or he's looking for the schar of renting out a millstone, ein eroy, a simin bracha l'olam. He's not going to see a simon bracha from such money. What do we mean by schar ishtoi? What do we mean when his wife does work in order to bring in money? It means maskulta. It means, so Rashi says we're talking about a very small amount of schar for a lot of bizoyin. Maskulta means a scale. So we're talking about she takes scales and goes around in the market to rent out the scales for a minute to anybody who needs to weigh something. So it's a big bizoyin. She's wandering around there in the market all day, and there's very little pay for it. How much is anybody going to pay to rent a scale for a couple of minutes already? So that's the kind of thing that a person doesn't see a simon bracha for it. What is he putting his wife through such bizoyin where you're not even making very much money from it? Tosfos gives a different explanation. Maskulta means spinning thread. So again, the idea is that it brings from Rabbeinu Chananel that the Gemara mentions elsewhere. The Gemara mentions in Ksubas that when women spin, it causes their sleeves roll up, their sleeves fall upward as because they have to lift up their arms as they're spinning, and therefore their arms are uncovered. So it's not sneistic. So again, when a man is having that, he's going to live off his wife's spinning, which is done in an unsneistic way, as she's misbaza from it. Then therefore he's not going to see a simon bracha from such money. As far as rechayim means agauta, when we say the money for rechayim for a millstone means when you're renting it out. If you're buying and selling millstones, and not like buying and selling anything else, there's no problem with that. But if you own a mill, if you own millstones, and you're just going to rent out for a couple of cents or whatever each time that somebody can use the mill to grind their flour, you're not going to see a simon bracha from that because again, it's a big tircha and very little schar from it. Aval avdo mezabna, but continues the Gemara. If we're talking about where the lady of the house, she makes things, for example, she makes clothing and sells it, then just the opposite, ishtabruchim ishtamach bakra. Then the pasuk considers that something praiseworthy, that she's very diligent and doing good work. Dichtiv sadin os savatimka, like you have in the pasuk in Eish Hayil, she makes a sheet and she sells it. So if she's making a regular business, making and selling things, then that's a good thing. We're talking about over here, where again she's just going around and renting out the scales to people, or like Tosfos says, only spinning. Then a simon bracha doesn't come from such a thing because the business should be handled in such a way that there's no bezoyin for the wife. Okay, Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa, another thing about simon bracha, hamistaka bekanim over kankanim. If a person is trying to make a profit off sticks, off kanim, is thin sticks, like used for fences or whatever, over kankanim, or with jugs or barrels, ain't a roi, a simon bracha l'olam, then he's not going to see a simon bracha from that either. My timer, why is that? Kivin de nafish afach zaihu, because their volume is very large, shalter buhu'ena, therefore the ayin hara has an effect on them, and therefore he doesn't see a simon bracha. Turn it on, bottom, we learned a braisa, some other things. Tagre simta, people who do business in the side streets, so therefore they also, Rashi says, bashuk, and therefore again the ayin hara has an effect on them. On the side, it brings a girsa from Tesefta, Tagri Shmita, that it means people who are selling doing Shmita, in which case it means they're doing something which is against halacha because they're selling food of Shmita, which you're not allowed to. Umagadle behema daka, also people who raise small animals, sheep and goats, where everybody is complaining about them because they're going and grazing in other people's fields. Tosfos says that's only if they're grazing in other people's fields, or at least in places where other people's fields could be. If you take them out to the forests, let's say, and they're grazing over there, then there's no problem with it. And v'kotzei lonis tovis, people who cut down good trees, so people who cut down good trees that are producing fruit, And also people who, whenever people are dividing something up, they're always looking to take the best portion. So those kinds of people, they won't see a simen bracha from it. My time at a tohu bei inchi, because people are always looking at them and wondering at them and talking about them. The tagore simta are sitting in the marketplace over there, or in the side streets over there next to the marketplace, and everybody is always seeing them. So there's an ein hara involved. Or if we say that means tagore shmita, then people are wondering how come this guy never does business all year, or throughout all the years, and all of a sudden shmita, he has fruit to sell. Something's wrong over here. Megadle behemadaka, people are complaining about them all the time, that they're or at least claiming that they're grazing in people's fields. Kotzei lonus tovus, people wonder, what are you taking a perfectly good fruit tree and cutting it down? It's actually, in certain cases, it's also up yalocha to do that because of Baal Tashchis. And nos nenen, b'chelik yofa, people also like, look at that guy, he always demands to have the best portion, and if not, then he makes a whole big deal about it. So those kinds of people, then they don't see a simen bracha because they end up getting an ayin hara. They end up getting an ayin hara and complaints of people. There are four ways of earning money where there's no simen bracha in it. The money that's paid to people who write sifrei Torah, tefillin, and mezuzas, and why that is, we'll talk about in a minute. The schar of people who translate. So mutugmanin means it means the ones who Rashi explains on Shabbos when the rav or the Rosh Hashiva is giving a drasha. So we know all over Shas that you would have a mutugman over there standing and explaining it more clearly to the people, so they get a schar for it. But that schar, there's not going to be a simen bracha. Uschar yisoimim, also the money of yisoimim, where, for example, so you have yisoimim have money that their father left them. And so you can have somebody, they invest the money with somebody where the deal is that they're going to split the profits. They have like a silent partnership with somebody where they're going to get half the schar and he's going to get the other half. And money that comes from overseas, meaning Rashi says like a person sends out ships with merchandise to places, to other places in order to import and export. But there's a lot of sakana involved with ocean travel. So those things, there's no simen bracha in. So the Gemara says, "Bishlemes schar meturgamonim." I can understand why meturgamonim, why there's schar, there's no simen bracha in. Mishum nemechzik is schar Shabbos, because it looks like schar of Shabbos, because they're getting paid in effect for something they're doing on Shabbos, which, by the way, is actually not so simple in halacha. You have a discussion in halacha about, for example, chazonim, balei kriya, other such people who work on Shabbos. What are the dinim of actually paying them for what they're doing on Shabbos? So the better thing to do is to do it b'havla, like you're paying them, let's say, by the month or something, regardless how many Shabbosim they're in. In the case of Balei Kriya and Chazonim, you have maybe a heter that you're paying them for the fact that they prepared before Shabbos or before Yom Tov. There are poskim who allow it because it's Makom Mitzvah, but it's still better to make one of those other arrangements if you can. So the Matur Gemonon, I can understand, it at least appears like Schar Shabbos, therefore there's no bracha in such money. Umois Yisoimim Nami, when it comes to money of Yisoimim, after a lav ne mechilaninu, Yisoimim are not able to be moichel because they're still young. So therefore, now it might happen that they, if they had their say in the matter, maybe the guy shouldn't be taking such a large percentage. But they're children and they don't know, so therefore he's doing it on their behalf and he's doing a good thing. But still, you never know that there might be he's taking some money which by rights they would have argued that we should have and we're not moichel. So therefore he doesn't see a simen bracha. I understand why money that comes from overseas trade, there's no bracha in it. Because not always do nisim happen. A person like that is constantly depending on nisim, that his ships shouldn't sink or whatever. So therefore, like that takes away his schar, and therefore it makes it that the money that he's earning is all earned sort of bederach nes, and therefore there's no simen bracha. El aschar kosvin my timer. Why should people who write sifrei Torah, tefillin, and mezuzas, why should they not have a bracha from a simen bracha from the money that they earn? So the answer is Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, Chof Dalad Tanias Yoshu Anshe Knesset Sagdola, Al Kosvis Tzvarim Tefillin Mezuzas Shalois Ashu. The Anshe Knesset Sagdola fasted 24 fasts about this, that people are right, sifrei Torah, tefillin, mezuzas should not become rich from their work. Sheumole Miss Ashwin and Kosvin, because if they became rich, they would stop writing. They're only doing it They're only doing it in order to earn a few bucks. If they could find something better, if they don't have to, they would. The Gemara is assuming, in other words, that they wouldn't do it necessarily voluntarily. They're only doing it because they have to earn a living. So therefore, so the Anshei Knesset Gedola said, the Jewish people need Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzos. They need qualified Sofrim. Therefore, better, they shouldn't become rich, because then if they become rich from it, they're going to decide, good, I can retire and I don't have to do it anymore. Tosfos does make a distinction that we're talking when they're selling it, when they're writing them in order to sell them. So we always expect they're going to be able to find people to buy their Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzos. But you have, on the other hand, let's say a person hires himself out. Let's say, for example, nowadays, a person wants to write a Sefer Torah and he hires a sofer to do it for him. So that the Chachamim didn't ask, that the Anshei Knesset Gedola didn't ask, because after all, such people, you don't have to worry about that once they become rich, they're going to stop, because it's not that often that they can find somebody to hire them like that. So therefore, they're going to continue doing it. And the Gemara adds another detail. Tanan Rabbanan, Kosvei Sfarim Tefillin Mezuzos, Hein, the people who write Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzos, Hein, V'Tagarehen, and also their merchants, meaning the ones that they sell the Tefillin Mezuzos to, V'Tagare Tagarehen, and the merchants of their merchants, meaning, in other words, you have a sofer sells to a wholesaler, and then a wholesaler sells to retails. So all those people, V'Chola Oiskim B'Melechas Shamayim, and everybody else who's involved in work of Hashem, and the Gemara interjects, La'asuyim Merchu Tcheles, that comes to include people who sell Tcheles, all of those, Einan Royan, Simon Bracha Loilam, all of those don't see a Simon Bracha, because as we said, they're essential for Jewish life, and therefore if they become rich, then they're going to stop doing it, then they're going to figure I can retire and I don't need to work it anymore. But Vim Oiskin Lishma, but if they're doing it for the sake of the mitzvah in the first place, rather than for the sake of schar, then royin, then they will see a simen bracha, because then they can have the best of both. They can have a simen bracha from their work. And such people, even if they become rich, they will continue writing anyway, because they understand how important it is for the Jewish people. So the Anshei Knesset Gedola didn't have to daven for them that they should stay poor. But the ones who are doing it only because, well, this is how I get my paycheck, then the Chachamim ask that they should remain, that they shouldn't become rich from it, because otherwise once they become rich, they're going to say, I don't need the paycheck anymore, I can retire. And then the Jewish people are not going to have enough sofrim and people who make tcheles. But again, if they're doing it l'shem shemayim, then it's all good. Then they can have the best of both. They have the schar of writing and making these things, and they can have a schar of it in Olam Hazeh as well. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. We're done with the piece of Agadah. Now we're going to start talking. Now we're going to start addressing what we said in our Mishnah about Minhag, where you have a Minhag where they do Malacha on Erev Pesach versus where they don't. So we're going to get into a more general discussion about Minhagim in different places, when you have to respect them, when you don't. That'll be tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
Shkoyach, Rabbi. Shkoyach.